Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
In less than a week, the doors of D.C. public schools will open for the new school year. It promises to bring new hopes and new challenges for one of the largest school districts in the nation. Last week, we heard from parents, teachers, and students about their expectations and concerns for the new school year. And this week, we sit down with the chancellor of the D.C. public school system, Dr. Louis Farabee. Good evening, and welcome to our WHUR, WHUT-TV Wednesday edition of The Daily Drum. This is part two of our two-part series entitled D.C.'s Back to School Basics. We have a long list of issues to address tonight: school safety concerns for students and teachers, health and wellness, the teachers union contract, just to name a few. And as we hear from the chancellor tonight, we also want to hear from you. Join the conversation at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. You can also join online using the hashtag #BackToSchoolBasics. That's back the number two, school basics. And you can watch tonight's conversation on WHUT-TV's YouTube page. Dr. Farabee, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us.
Harold, always a pleasure to be with you, sir.
I want to start with some of the same issues that we discussed last week. Using the traditional grading scale of A, B, C, D, or F, what grade would you give DCPS for school safety?
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, safety ebbs and flows. And, you know, the reality is our school system is in the symbiotic relationships with our community. And so when, you know, there's challenge or conflicts in the community, oftentimes that spills over to school. But certainly give our team an A for its responsiveness. And, you know, that's all we can ask of our team is, one, to be proactively prepared when there are incidents, and then how we respond, and ultimately how we communicate our response to the school communities when there is an incident. Certainly when we came back from the pandemic, there was a need to build back relationships among student to student, also student to adult. Think about being away from school for a year and a half, almost two. There were challenges coming back. There still were challenges last year, and we anticipate, you know, the work we have ahead will pay off. What we've done around conflict resolution, helping young people and adults, you know, deal with some of the issues that we face when we try to build back relationship and build that muscle for schools. But what I can say, Harold, which I think gives us a strong grade, is I consistently hear from our students and our families that schools are still some of the safest place for young people. You know, when I talk to our students, they feel safe at school. I think what's important for us is to ensure that that is consistent throughout the entire district and the system, regardless where students go to school.
And well, as you know, last week, the Washington Teachers Union released the results of a survey on school violence, along with a list of recommendations. I'm sure you've seen it.
Yeah, I have. It was disappointing because I meet with President Polk Lyons on a monthly basis. We consistently meet and discuss issues. And this issue of a survey never came up in any of our discussions. So it was, again, disappointing to see that in a press release. But it would have been helpful for us to know, you know, how many teachers of our 5,000-plus workforce contributed to the survey, how the results were generated. And a lot of what I've seen is around working conditions, which is related to the collective bargaining process that we're in right now. So I see it somewhat as a strategy for bargaining, which we're happy to enter into. But in terms of just general safety in our schools, we constantly keep our educators updated on what our protocols are, what our procedures. In fact, we had a summer institute this summer around safety that we just went back in and did a double down on all of our emergency preparedness, our incident response protocols. And in addition to that, there's been a lot of work with the physical space. And so there's been updates to our security systems, door locking, surveillance cameras, weapons abatement that we do for our students in grades 6 through 12. And then finally, we're always looking at our protocols for visitors to ensure that there's safety in the building in terms of who's in and out of the building. So we refine our visitor protocol some to ensure that principals are empowered to maintain a safe learning environment when visitors are on campus.
I did want to drill down just a little bit on some of the issues, because one of the things that I found surprising, maybe I shouldn't, but as it relates to the public school systems in general, not just DC, but just across the board, the report said, or the survey said, you know, 42% said workplace violence has increased in their school in the last year. 55% say they witnessed student-on-student assaults. That's not surprising. But 30% experienced assault, student-on-staff violence, physical threats, slapping, punching, kicking, groping, or inappropriate touching. As it relates to those things, what do you think about that? What do you believe can be done about those interpersonal issues?
Yeah, so I don't know the methodology around the survey, but we've certainly seen, you know, different behaviors post-pandemic. And what we've seen the greatest success with is helping young people regulate their emotions better and also, you know, give them skills to ensure that when there is conflict or there's a feeling of aggression, how to respond differently, communicating your anger in different ways. It doesn't have to be physical. But we do see more of that. And, you know, a lot of young people, when you're without something for a long period of time, you overcompensate. And what we've seen is a lot of peer interactions of where students aren't able to interact with their peers in a way that's healthy sometimes, and not able to deal with a conflict in a way that doesn't involve physical aggression. However, what we have seen is our restorative circles, peer mediation, those strategies are effective, and we are starting to see students get more acclimated to the return to school, and I anticipate for this upcoming school year, we'll see more of that. But there's still work to do. And, you know, I think if we were all honest, even as adults, going back into the workplace was a challenge, you know, yeah, and it still is. And mm-hmm. So I think we have to recognize that our young people experience something that is very unique and life changing and once in a lifetime experience. And I can't imagine not having school the amount of time that our students missed out on school. And so I certainly understand why it's been a challenge, but I believe we have the right strategies in place. I think what's important is we have seen ability for our mental health professionals to be successful when also dealing with some of the trauma associated with the pandemic. And we are at the table with all of the industry professionals to see what we can do to build up that workforce, because there's a national shortage. When you think about school psychologists, social workers, counselors, so we've been able to build some of that back. But that's an ongoing challenge that we continue to work on.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is a WHUR, WHUT TV special. It's our Wednesday event, DC's Back to School Basics. We are talking to the Chancellor of the DC Public School System, Dr. Louis Farabee. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Of course, phone lines are open all the way up until 8 o'clock. You mentioned something I wasn't familiar with, restorative circles. What is that?
Yeah, so restorative practices, we also have restorative circles. So it's where we bring students in when there's a known conflict. And we help them talk through that conflict in a way that doesn't involve, again, physical aggression. And it's also a way to you know, bring out, you know, some of the root causes of the conflicts, you know, and sometimes we see that, you know, it's associated with social media, which, again, young people have been overcompensating from being out of school. And then there's just, you know, natural he say, she says types things that you deal with as well. But we have seen that when we can sit young people down who have conflicts, With a trusted adult, we can often get to a solution where the young people not only resolve that conflict, but become, you know, either friends or associates in a way that's healthier.
Do you think those issues, these challenges, are in any way, shape, or form interfering with teachers' ability to teach or students' ability to learn?
Let's be clear. I think the reaction to those behaviors have been consistent. Like, we're not going to allow a student to disrupt learning for others. There are discipline protocols that we follow. I think just the number of those issues have increased after the pandemic, and our response will always be we want to ensure maintain a vibrant and nurturing learning environment for all of our students. And if a student needs to be removed from the learning environment, we'll do that. There needs to be other consequences, we'll do that as well. So we don't want any of this to be a distraction for what needs to happen for students academically and socially and emotionally in the classroom.
Talk to me about truancy. How would you characterize it? And what's your plan to make sure that kids stay in school?
Yeah, so two things are true in my view around truancy. One is the behaviors start early, and that pattern progresses as students get older. And so oftentimes what we see, it could be as early as, you know, kindergarten or first grade, and, you know, the student or parent are okay with missing a couple of days here and there. And as they get older, those couple of days extend to more time out of school, and it becomes a habit, a way of thinking around school and expectation. What we also have seen is there are more older students that are responsible caregivers for their younger siblings, which presents a challenge oftentimes. And there's a need for young people to work, which oftentimes lead to them being out of school to fulfill needs in the household, to ensure that there's income for the family. And so what we see is there's typically a progression. If there's a challenge with attendance, and we have greater numbers of truancy for our older students, particularly our high school students, compared to our elementary and middle age students.
So how do you address that? Based on what you're sharing with us, it's a complex issue. There's no one reason why a child is truant. So how do you get them to return to school, to stay in school, once that kind of pattern has developed?
Well, we first try to help our younger students and families of younger students understand the consequences and share data with them about their attendance early on to kind of curb those behaviors. If this still progresses, the students are older, we try to find out why they're missing school. If it's a need to work, we try to create conditions where they can work and also earn income for the family and also come to school. We have what we call some twilight options, where students can come to school on a non-traditional schedule. We have our state campuses that are for non-traditional students as well. So we try to find the right learning environment if a student needs to work or they need to be a caregiver. If those are not the challenges, we try to find out what other issues that we can be helpful with to get the young person ultimately in school. And what we also have found that if we can get young people on a career trajectory in high school, meaning they're taking courses towards industry certification. For example, today we had the opening of our Advanced Technical Center, which back in the day you would call the Trade Center, but mm-hmm. basically that's where you'll learn a trade for the workforce. We found that when students do that type of work, they're much more engaged, and attendance is better, grades is better, and so we try to connect them with their interests to start to build a career when in high school. And we have many options, whether you're interested in plumbing, HVAC, electrical. Today, we toured a facility where you can earn certification towards nursing or cybersecurity. I think that's really key in helping a young person see a career, but also give them the opportunity potentially to earn some income while they're in high school.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to the Chancellor of the D.C. Public School System, Dr. Louis Farabee. This is our Wednesday WHUR, WHUT partnership, D.C.'s Back to School Basics. If you have a comment or a question, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stacy calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Stacy, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go right ahead. What's on your mind?
Okay. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to find out what is the plan for transportation for special needs students this year? It was a disaster last year. My child has already started school, and we're not off to a good start.
Yeah, thank you for that question. D.C. Public Schools collaborates with the Office of the State Superintendent of Education to provide transportation for students who may have special needs. The first step in the process to ensure that there is an appropriate request for transportation submitted, and we collaborate the families to ensure that that happens. But if there's ever a concern about transportation, we encourage families to contact the Parent Resource Center for the Office of the State Superintendent of Education. That number is 202-727-6436. Again, that's 202-727-6436. And they're happy to help. We want to make sure that all of our students are able to get to school safely. If students do not require a need for transportation via bus, also a reminder to the community that we still have our Kids Ride free cars that are available to students to have access to Metro and bus transit. And no cost to the family.
Stacy, quickly, let me ask you, was this a transportation issue or was it there something else?
The school bus is not reliable. There are several days I was contacted that there's no driver and I need to come and pick up my child from school, disrupting my work day and creating issues for me in employment.
I see.
And I've never been able to get a hold of anyone. I've there's left several messages. No one has returned my call. I just don't know where to go.
Have you already started the school year?
We have. This is our second week of school.
Okay. All right. And you're experiencing that those challenges already with the start of the school year?
Not as far as having to pick my child up midday, but just not being reliable. I've been giving a 7 o'clock time, and the bus is already coming at 7:30, which is already outside of the 15-20 minute window that they give.
It sounds like because we don't start on the 28th, this may be a public charter school. Does your child currently attend a public charter school?
He does, definitely.
Okay. So what I would also encourage you to do, if you're not able to experience success with the resource center line I provided, you're always welcome to communicate directly with the public charter school board as well. And I'm quite sure they would be happy to assist.
Okay. Stacy, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Hassan calling from Maryland. Hassan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have a few comments. First, I would like to share that you asked about restorative practices. Restorative practices in the District of Columbia is a good idea. Unfortunately, it takes quite a bit of training for people to understand restorative practices, restorative circles, and how to bring the students together in which they have to resolve the issues. But the training doesn't occur. They may have one professional development or two professional developments, and they're released into the school system, and they really don't understand how restorative practices work. The International Institute of Restorative Practices in Pennsylvania does a very good program. I'm not plugging them, but they do a very good program, and that's where I was trained. The other issue that I find is that we're hiring a lot of teachers that understand pedagogy. They're excellent at what they do, but they're not trained in SEL. Many of our students in the District of Columbia are social emotional learners that require a bit of extra assistance. if they receive that assistance, perhaps you would not have as much truancy as we do have in the District of Columbia and other school systems as well. I think that is something that we need to focus on in our public schools. It's not just something that the charter schools should focus on, but I believe it's something that all schools, social-emotional learning, have the teachers trained in that, particularly those who aren't familiar with students in urban environments. I think that's a biggie as well. You need to be trained in that in order to be totally effective at teaching students with social-emotional challenges.
Hassan, thank you. You said quite a bit. Thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. Chancellor Farabee, I will have you respond to what he shared with us after I take a quick station break. We are going to say goodbye to our 96.3 WHUR audience. This conversation on DC's Back to School Basics will continue in just a moment on Sirius XM Channel 141, on 96.3 HD2, 98.3 FM, and on YouTube, WHUT TV. Stay with us.